Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Women Emerging podcast. I'm Julian Middleton, founder of Women Emerging and your podcast host. Every Wednesday, I explore how women lead differently. Over time, all of us who are part of Women Emerging are determined to redefine leading so that more of us can say, if that's leading, I'm in. Last week, we covered the why of cultural intelligence. This week, we're going into the how and into core and flex. Core and flex. Anywhere I go these days, people talk to me about their core and their flex. I feel like I've caused trouble with my new language of cultural intelligence. But this week, let's start on core and flex. Now, I think women who have more cultural intelligence have sorted out this issue of what their core is and what their flex is. Okay, wait a minute. Maybe I should do a health warning first. I ask you to suspend judgment. It's an incredibly oversimplistic, deeply, deeply, deeply oversimplified little diagram and concept. But actually, in all great simplicity, there is often real intricacy and, I think, depth. So I ask you to suspend your judgment for a moment and stick with my simplicity and to keep with me. Now, women who have more cultural intelligence, i.e. women who can cross boundaries between geographies, generations, sectors, specialisms, backgrounds, belief, aspirations, ability. I think that they've figured out what their core and their flex is. Before we start describing it, draw a picture on a piece of paper of a cone, C-O-N-E, a cone, with a pointy end and an opening end. Now, turn your cone on its side. We don't want a cone that's facing upwards. We want a cone that's facing sideways. And on the left-hand side is the tip bit, the narrow bit of the cone. And on the right-hand side is where it opens up. So, tip on the left, opened up on the right. The core lies in the left, in the tip end. And the core is everything about you that if you stop doing it or stop believing it, you would no longer be you. Now, everybody thinks that when I talk about that, I'm talking about values and that's it. But I don't, it's not just about values, it's about everything. It's everything from your core behaviours, your core skills, your core capabilities, your core values, your core beliefs, your core identity, your core spirit. It's the whole lot. Everything from there to your behaviours, how you greet people, your mannerisms, how you do things physically. Everything from those physical, pragmatic, practical skills to your inner beliefs. That is in your core. And they are the ones that if you stop believing them or stop doing them, you would no longer be you. The other end of your cone that's lying on its side, at the end that's on the right, where it opens up, that is your flex. Your flex lies out there. And your flex is all the stuff that you have decided that you can flex on, that you can move around with and adapt. Now, again, people often say to me, oh, your flex is all the stuff that you haven't decided yet. And no, that's not it. You have decided. It's a deliberate and a very, very clear decision. And I think that your flex defines you and your cultural intelligence as much as your core. And I propose that the stronger your core is, the more people will trust you. And the more flexible your flex is, the more people will trust you. Now, this is best illustrated by some examples. And some examples of the extremes. So let's take one extreme example first, where you have an enormous, 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 enormous core and a tiny, 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 tiny little flex. Imagine the vertical line between your core and your flex on your cone is way over towards the right. So your flex is really, really tiny. Your core is dominating. Now that, I associate that with my grandparents. They lived in the north of England. They lived in a street where they took the view that if everybody in their street only agreed with them, then there wouldn't be a problem. They were all core with a tiny flex. I love them dearly, but frankly, you couldn't take them outside the front door. I say they had a small flex. It was tiny. It was a sliver over there on the right was their flex. The other extreme is the opposite, where you have a tiny, 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 tiny little core and an enormous cavernous flex. So the line, the vertical line between your core and your flex, in this case, was right down towards the left. The core was a tiny little bit at the tip, and I associate this with my first boss. He was a salesperson. He was a salesperson, and I remember going out with him and watching him. And watching and watching, watching, and saying to myself, is there anything this guy wouldn't say to get a deal? His flex was enormous. His core was tiny. Nobody had any idea who he was. And you simply would not trust him with anything. There's a variation on this tiny core. There are some people. I remember a young woman, and I was talking to her about core and flex. She was at university, very intense, lovely young woman. And she kept on looking at me and saying to me, surely, 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 Julia, my core is private. And I said, yes, of course it's private. And then she looked at me and said, but should it be private? And the answer is, when you're leading, it can't be private. You have to reveal it, because otherwise people won't trust you. It just cannot be private entirely. So there's core and flex in the simplest of terms. In this episode, we'll go into it in more detail, but just to come out of it for a minute, I thought I would share with you conversations with Ridima, Cheryl, Elspeth, and Hinamoa. And each of them talked to me about why the concept of core and flex has and continues to help them so much in their leading.
It has taken me some time to unpick what are my core values, beliefs, and behaviors. And once I know my core, I think I'm able to, and of course that makes it easy for me what I can flex on, where I cannot flex. And I've also learned this, Julia, in the last 4.5 years, I'm more of a discovery that when I have stayed true to my core, I've seen people trust me for who I am. They trust me more. There's a credibility and reliability factor that kicks into the relationship when I'm absolutely clear about my core values and my belief systems at the very start of any relationship. And especially these are the relationships who I close relationships. Of course, my family and my friends, I'm absolutely core. I'm clear to them. You know, core to me is equality. So if tomorrow you're going to come up to me and say that, what is happening in India is absolutely right, I'm going to stand against it. Similarly, if it comes to my team back in my organization, if it is about fairness, then again, I'm going to stand up wherever I see there is disparity.
So it really is pretty clear that once you find it,
you value it, you treasure it, you look after it. So I went to talk to Cheryl, because sometimes I think that one of the biggest purposes of having a strong core is that you have a very big flex. Does Cheryl agree?
I absolutely agree with that, because I think the flex is really where your values get expressed in a very in an actionable way. I agree with you. I know what's core to me, and the example that I constantly use is your example, Julia, when you gave an example about a very simple decision you had to make about something you would or wouldn't wear at a family gathering and wedding. And it showed a lot about you that you were willing to move from where you believed your core was in terms of how you believed you wanted to look and what you were willing to wear, to being flexible and thinking and being empathetic with the people around you. So for me, the flex actually is a better definer of who you are and who you're becoming.
That's an interesting expression, that your flex defines you. Very, very interesting expression. But Elspeth is very clear that you need to be quite careful with the word flex, because people misunderstand it very often.
People get confused around what flex is. And they want to say, well, everything that isn't in my core is in my flex. And so, you know, that's a sort of a quite simple assumption that folk make when they're introduced to the model. And so that notion of really teasing into flex is about thoughtfulness. Flex is about taking a position. It's, you know, a position of flexibility on an issue. And the notion that one must consciously flex that flex, because I do find that a lot of folk like to claim that something is in their flex. But when push comes to shove, the notion of actually flexing your flex is a little more challenging than they would have assumed.
So if you say you're going to flex, you really have to flex. Makes sense? I want to talk to Hinamura and ask her to give me an example of where in her Maori culture, flex had been really put to the test. So this was her story.
We were not able to do some of our very, some of the central tenets of our culture. We're not going to be allowed. So one of the things that you will know is that we press noses, right? It's called a hongi. We share the same breath. So clearly that was not going to be allowed in COVID because of the risk of transmission. And this is a really big deal. This has been incredibly difficult in our culture initially last year, when we were getting our heads around this. The other thing we weren't going to be able to do was have tangihanga in the way that we do. So a tangihanga is a funeral ceremony that lasts 3 days usually. And there are many people that come and go to a traditional meeting place to pay their respects to the person who's passed away. And the family usually gather and sleep together on the marae to be with the body of the person, to be with their loved one who's passed on. So you can hear that there's lots of people coming and going. There's lots of people visiting. Again, not going to be acceptable in the COVID environment. And so we've had to flex as a culture, and we have. And that's because we have an incredibly strong core, and we do have the length of the rope, as you say, and we have the leadership to illustrate and to sort of pave the way and provide a sense of safety, cultural safety, for the wider community to say, hey, we can do this. I know it's shocking, the idea that we can't hongi each other, and it's shocking. How are we going to cope? How are we going to grieve differently for our loved ones who've passed away? But we're going to do it. We're going to find ways. We're going to use technology. We have reclaimed some of the things that our ancestors did during the Spanish flu epidemic, when 8 times the number of Māori died compared to non-Māori. That was in 1918 and 1919. So many of my relations, everyone's relations died have had relations who died during the Spanish flu. So we've reclaimed some different practices which were used then to acknowledge each other in a culturally salient way without risking transmission of this deadly virus. And so I think for me, that's an illustration of exactly what you're talking about. This cultural flex reflects the strength of the leadership, illustrating, hey, we're really grounded, we've really got this, we can flex in terms of our what's called our tikanga, our LORE, our cultural law, and then we can come back when the time is right and we can re-engage and really appreciate even more the things that we weren't able to do for a while, which we can now do again.
Do you know, one of the most common questions I'm asked about quorum flex is, where is the ultimate and perfect position of the line between quorum and flex? And I largely avoid that question because it sort of implies that there could ever be a perfect position, and a perfect position that would reflect that you had acquired cultural intelligence. I think that it's an endless journey, one that is never complete. If you ever think you are culturally intelligent, you probably are no longer on that journey. There is no perfect position. I think that the better question and indicator is that line between core and flex moving? Is it calibrating and recalibrating as you continue on your journey? Now, it shouldn't be swinging, and nor should it be going to the extremes. Remember, the extremes of left or right, the extremes of core, all core, no flex, or all flex, no core. The examples of my grandparents and my first boss. If you're right out on the extremes, and I think you have some questions to ask of yourself, but if it's somewhere in the middle and it's constantly evolving and calibrating, I think that there's a really good chance that you're well on your journey towards cultural intelligence. You're putting yourself into different situations, meeting different kinds of people, recognizing that you're at different chapters in your life, and you're keeping that line under constant review, calibrating it and recalibrating it so that there are things that you take from your flex and you say, actually, that's not flex, that's in my core. And things that you take from your core and you realize, that's not core, it never really was core, it's really in my flex. Calibrating, moving, regularly moving. And if the line becomes static, it seems to me that it's either because you're not crossing boundaries at all and you're just seeking out people who are like you. One of the silly indicators I use is if people are following social media, but only following social media that they agree with. And I think that is an indicator that you might well have a cultural intelligence problem. You won't be you won't be following lots of people who are not like you. And yet, those are people that you may be leading one day. You need to certainly understand them if you're going to produce, and even if you're not leading them, you need to understand them if you're going to produce change. Even if they're just your stakeholders, not your colleagues, you really need to understand them. So that line needs to be moving, because otherwise there's a real question as to whether you're crossing boundaries at all, whether you're really just staying in your own space, or even there's a question, I suppose, you may be crossing boundaries, but when you are, you're simply not listening. And what people say just sort of goes over your head. So keep the line moving, calibrating, but not swinging around. It's interesting, there are often sort of trigger moments when people do start to swing around. And I mean, I would take the example of age. I see a lot of people of my generation who, when they are surrounded by young people, and feel the pressure to somehow become part of a different culture from them, they start to swing, and sometimes they sort of massively swing and become all core. So people my generation, absolutely convinced of their own rightness when presented with or surrounded by people who are half their age. And the core sort of dominates and stagnates and dominates. But then you also see people who do the complete opposite, where they swing and become all flex, never revealing their core at all, showing that they can be as sort of flexible and cool and adaptable. And in either situations, I would have thought that the people around you don't quite trust you, because if you have a tiny core or a tiny flex, I think people don't quite understand where you are and who you are. So having cultural intelligence means that that line moves. It doesn't swing and it doesn't go to the extremes. It will, of course, move over time. And one of the things that's fun to do is to get a piece of paper and have a look at where the line has been over the last few years or even the last few decades for you. I know that, for example, as a child, I adored my father and I pretty well adopted his core and then made it even bigger. So as a young person, I had an enormous core. And then part of in my sort of teenage years, the flicks took over. I was always in situations and living in situations where I was in a minority. I was the only person from my culture or my generation or my geography. I was a sort of migrant. And it's interesting because that often makes you either massively core or massively flex. And I think I swung around with those two, trying to integrate in one moment and then trying to absolutely not integrate at the next. And then in my early 20s, I think my core disappeared again because I was sort of trying everything. And that's interesting, isn't it? You're trying new things all the time, so you're not quite sure what your core is. And then over the years, the line continues to move. You lead your first team of people who are double your age, or you're the leader of teams where everybody's half your age, and that moves your core and flex. You have children, and that moves your core and flex. You have nephews and nieces, and that moves your core and flex. You have teenagers around, and that moves your core and flex, because they're absolutely asking the most impossible questions of you, and you are struggling to try and answer them. And in trying to answer them, in many cases, your core and your flex begins to move around. And then, of course, you get to an older age, and that's when it becomes really dangerous. You have to be very careful about your core, because you begin to feel it sort of creeping up as you become convinced that you know everything, and you have to absolutely push it back down again. It's a long journey. And as you proceed on the journey, I think you discover all kinds of things. And one of the most interesting ones is when you discover what I would call the knots in your core. You begin to discover the beliefs, the habits, that are in your core, that are not necessarily based on judgment. They're based on prejudgment. I think you'll discover things in your core that you haven't put in there. Somebody else has put in there and they need dusting down. I think particularly as women, there are things, you know, you suddenly discover that in your core is this need to be the good girl. And I think over time you begin to realize that shouldn't be in your core. You need to dust it down and to move to your flex, because there will be times when you're the good girl and there will be times when you're not. There is flex there. This is not in my core. Or the imposter syndrome, of course, which so many of us as women feel. It's not you that planted the imposter syndrome inside yourself. It's the world around you that planted it inside yourself. And I think that as you proceed, you discover the knots in your core, the things that frankly don't belong in there and that you need to take out. And then there will be also things that you slowly realise are prejudgment and not judgment. You know, I have a very strong memory. I was brought up in my early childhood as French. And that has given me huge strengths over the years. But it also buried inside my core some thoughts that I wasn't even conscious of. I remember in my early 20s, I took a job where I was working in North London, and a particular part of North London that at the time had the biggest Moroccan community outside Morocco. And I remember being really shocked at myself when I started the job, because in almost all situations in my life, I had up till then always taken a step forward when I felt I was in another culture. And for the first time in my life, deeply unconsciously, I took a step back, and that needed unpicking. What was it in my core that was causing me to do that? And when I thought about it a great deal, I began to realize that it was a piece of my engineering in the early days, being brought up in France and in the French system. And I intuitively sort of took a step back when I met people from North Africa. I was completely unconscious of it. And it was an intriguing thing to find in my core, because it was something that was based on prejudgment rather than judgment. Prejudice without any doubt. Prejudice I was deeply unconscious of, but that had been planted in me. Ever since that realization, I've always dusted it down, determinedly taken it out of my core. And it has to be said, for all my career, I have always been involved in Arab initiatives, in projects in the Arab world and in North Africa, because I've always wanted to counterbalance that knot that I discovered in my core. So when you find that on your journey, you have a knot in your core, I think you have to make a decision. You either dust it down and move it determinedly to your flex, or you face up to the reality that some knots in your core are so deeply baked into your DNA that you actually can't probably move them out of your core into your flex. But at least knowing them, acknowledging them, understanding them, figuring out what triggers them, predicting them, that means that you can counterbalance them, and those knots become your problem to deal with rather than somebody else's problem. They're your problem. So core and flex, the line between the two, the knots that you find in your core, we're making progress on core and flex. This week has been very much about core and flex in the context of me, you, I, the single human being. Next week, we're going to start talking about core and flex when there is not just one core and not just one flex, but lots of cores and lots of flexes, because different people are interfacing, different people are working together, and what happens when one cornflex meets another cornflex. It'll be simplistic again, but I hope helpful and a useful mirror to understand your own cultural intelligence. So till next week, I send you lots and lots of love, Julia. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to follow our podcast channel or follow us on Instagram, or join the Women Emerging community on LinkedIn or through our website, womenemerging.org. That's womenemerging.org. There you can find out about the expeditions that we're currently running and how we can help if you decide to start an expedition yourself.